the cauldron of Pharisee. My true cauldron of incubation, it has been taken by the gods from the mysteries of the elemental abyss, a fitting decision that ennobles one from one's center that pours forth a terrifying stream of speech from the mouth. I am immersion, white knee, pale of substance, gray of hair, accomplishing my incubation in proper poetic form in diverse color. The gods do not apportion the same to everyone. Tipped, inverted, right side up. No knowledge, half knowledge, full knowledge. For Eber and Don, the making of fearful poetry, vast, mighty drafts of death spells, in active voice, in passive silence, in the neutral balance between, in the proper construction of rhyme. In this way it narrates the path and function of my cauldron. I sing the cauldron of wisdom, which bestows the merits of every art, through which treasure increases, which magnifies every common artifact, which builds up in a person, which builds up a person through their gifts. Where is the root of poetry in a person? In the body? Or in the soul? They say it is in the soul, for the body does nothing without the soul. Others say it is in the body where the arts are learned, passed through the bodies of our ancestors. It is said this is the seat of what remains over the root of poetry. And the good knowledge in every person's ancestry comes not into everyone, but comes into every other person. What then is the root of poetry and every other wisdom? Not hard. Three cauldrons are born in every person, i.e. the cauldron of incubation, the cauldron of motion, and the cauldron of wisdom. The cauldron of incubation is born upright in a person from the beginning. It distributes wisdom to people in their youth. The cauldron of motion, however, after turning, increases. That is to say, it is born tipped on its side in a person. The cauldron of wisdom is born on its lips, upside down, and it distributes wisdom in every art besides, in addition to poetry. The cauldron of motion, then, in every other person, is on its lips, i.e. in ignorance of course. It is side-slanting in people of bard craft and strokes, mid-level poetry. It is on its back in the great streams, the highest poetic grades of great wisdom and poetry. On account of this, not every mid-level person has it on its back, because the cauldron of motion must be turned by sorrow or by joy. Question. How many divisions of sorrow that turn the cauldrons of stages? Not hard. Four. Longing? Grief. The sorrows of jealousy and the discipline of pilgrimage to holy places. It is internally that these are born, although the cause is from the outside. There are then two divisions of joy that turn the cauldron of wisdom, i.e. divine joy and human joy. In human joy, there are four divisions among the wise. Sexual intimacy, the joy of health, untroubled by the abundance of goading when a person takes up the prosperity of bardcraft. The joy of the binding principle of wisdom after good poetic construction. And the joy of fitting poetic frenzy, from the grinding away at the fair nuts of the nine hazels of the well of Sagus in the she realm. They cast themselves in great quantities like a ram's fleece upon the ridges of the Boyne, moving against the stream swifter than race horses driven in the middle month on a magnificent day every 7 years. The gods touch a person through divine and human joys, so that they are able to speak prophetic poems and dispense wisdom and perform miracles, as well as offering wise judgments and giving precedence in wisdom and answer to everyone's wishes. But the source of these joys, the gods, is outside the person, although the actual cause of the joy is internal. I sing of the cauldron of motion, understanding grace, accumulating knowledge, streaming poetic inspiration as milk from the breast. It is the tide water point of knowledge, union of sages, stream of sovereignty, glory of the lowly, mastery of words, swift understanding, reddening satire, craftsman of histories, cherishing pupil, looking after binding principles, distinguishing the intricacies of language, moving towards music, propagation of good wisdom, enriching nobility, ennobling non-nobles, exalting names, relating praises through the working of law, comparing of ranks, pure weighing of nobility with fair words of the wise with streams of sages, the noble brew in which is boiled the true root of all knowledge, which bestows after duty, which is climbed after diligence, which poetic ecstasy sets in motion, which joy turns, which is revealed through sorrow. It is lasting power, undiminishing protection. I sing of the cauldron of motion. What is this motion? A heart. An artistic turning, or artistic after-turning, or artistic journey, i.e., it bestows good wisdom and nobility and honor after turning. The cauldron of motion bestows, is bestowed, extends, is extended, nourishes, is nourished, magnifies, is invoked, sings, is sung, preserves, is preserved, arranges, is arranged, supports, is supported. Good is the well of measuring. Good is the dwelling of speech. Good is the confluence of power which builds up strength. It is greater than every domain. It is better than every inheritance. It brings one to knowledge, adventuring away from ignorance. That's immersion. So on the bus back down here today, I had some time for myself, and I decided to do a bit of art poetica and ask, what is all this poetry about? And, you know, why are we poets, and why do we bother with poetry? And what is the point of poetry? And so I did a bit of prose.
It's money.
It's money, yeah. Yeah, we're all rich.
Money, yeah, money.
So there's a prose part to this, and then there's a poem that follows it. And then I'll get out of your way and let all of you poets get up here and say that. What is a poet? An answer should be ready for poets. Days when it seemed to many that the poet is unnecessary. What's the use in these poets? They do nothing, sure. What do poets do? A poet remembers to live. Listen. Waits to discover. Poets read and knows. Poets teach and give growth. They place themselves into situations most would not have the opportunity for. To an extent, they are self-imposed guinea pigs who challenge the times by offering themselves up as examples. They offer ways and they point out solutions. Poets present alternatives. They suggest the nature of things. Poets enrich relationships. Poets remind. They observe, are vigilant, and issue warning. They seek to understand most completely. Poets protect value and give themselves to need. They embody the world about them, becoming complex symbols at once protected from the forgeries of definition. Poets nurture culture. They seek to know potential and to realize in themselves. They seek to know potential and to realize it in themselves and others. Poets show with or without doing. Poets show. Poets show up. They master the art of timing and humility. Poets reveal the truth of things gently where appropriate. They swim beneath the hum of life to treat the yearning below. And in this, poets are doctors. Poets respect limitations through acceptance, through recognition and expression. They sense the changes that limitations undergo, challenging those limitations anew. Poets are directly shaped by their decisions. As a poet pretends, it is likely that unless they are criminals, they are being forced to do so, and this amounts to an insult not unlike slavery, no matter how temporary. The nature of poetry will in these circumstances divide one or other form of retribution. To manipulate the poet by force is to minimize one's future at the very least, and more extremely, this can lead to annihilation of the spirit. The glance of a poet's wrongs can diminish the offender's well-being by many years, for poets know the intricacies of war, of time, of memory. A poet seeks a foundation of certainty and aims to avoid addressing situations unless this certainty is present. In this, a poet aims often to mirror situations, and as a mirror, the poet is a catalyst for understanding and change. Poets suspend possibilities without inclining towards one or the other. Poets offer these as gifts of choice unconditionally. Poets inspire. They inspire compassion, respect, courage, wisdom, and self-belief. Poets praise the beauty of things. They reveal shortfalls. Where possible, they prevent degradation. Poets are people, blessed with the gift of sensitivity and sensibility. They are not gods. They challenge life itself where others are restricted or incapable. Poets are self-employed. They are fueled by faith and passion. They unravel deception and manipulation. And in this, the poet is shaman. Poets profess and confess, reveal and deny. They present the oxygen of clarity. They seek every completeness, however small. There are full-time poets and part-time poets. Who is not potentially a poet? Is it enough to call oneself a poet? What poet is without words considered? So many poets, poets who dilute, who contrive, who compromise. Are these poets? Poets who act, poets off track, poser poets, oxymoronic poets, poets who can or cannot sense their own priorities, over-personal poets, self-praising poets, semi-demi-semi-quaver poets, flash-in-the-pan poets. Are these poets? Who knows? It seems clear to me, though, that the poet must live and show it. So, as the hibernation of Hibernia thaws, poets appear. Their heads ice heavy, lopsided, they aim for the sun. The slowest of petals that shed and forget dawns knowing of itself. By mid-morning, tomorrow's youth has been provided for with endless images, forgotten quickly in droplets and streams till now centuries solid. Memories take shelter, take root, imagine their own discoveries in another age. By early afternoon, poetry streams incessantly, seeks out the harmonics of recognition, edges wide-eyed towards the great symphony and its seasons, as they smile back at the spoken patterns and witness themselves. We will fix you, we shout. Yes, they reply, here's what you need. As Hibernia's hibernation frees itself, poets awaken, reluctantly at first, and without knowing how, begin. Thank you. I'm going to ask poetic here. Okay, we've got a lineup, so I'm going to hand the mic over to the first person on it. Jennifer Matthews.
That was great. It's a rare treat to hear Paul's stuff, so I'm going to be begging you for copies of that for next week. So Okay. I don't have anything of my own, but I'm reading a little Emily Dickinson to entice you to come up here next week at 7:30. I have 5 copies here for anyone who will actually show up at 7:30 to discuss there with me. There is more than just me talking to myself. I need to just come to you and Emily Dickinson, famous refuge, so this is one for all the kindred spirits, fellow single ladies out there, a bit of inspiration, at the risk of sounding like Beyonce or something. pre-Beyonce, Emily Dickinson, the soul selects her own society. The soul selects her own society, then shuts the door. To her divine majority, presents no more. Unmoved, she notes the chariot, pausing at her low gate. Unmoved, an emperor be kneeling upon her mat. I've known her from an ample nation. She's one, then closed the bounds of her attention like stone.
Looking forward to your poetry too, back up here on the stage. Next up we have Anita Daly.
The poem is about terror and dread, about beauty and lying, in other words, being human. The lobster leaf. The leaf is the longest I've ever noticed. It has the colour and shape of a lobster, raised its back. In the foreground mirror me, a thin like raggedy claws, armour shaped defence. No use to it, it awaits death by burning, on the counter, next to the cooker. The leaf is supported with veins. It awaits death by burning, on the counter, next to the cooker, in boiling water. The leaf is supportive at veins, like wooden planks in a boat, stunning as a kitchen table, scrubs lies into its pine deals. How many years were to be safe and unafraid? For how many shipwrecks, safe and afraid? How near to boiling water? How near to boiling point is the water? What about enjoyment? How much longing for employment.
Thank you, Nita. And next we have Brian O'Rourke. Beautiful body of a hippie, that I drop into daily. On the way to the bus station, there's a big shopping mall in Babylon that looks less like it's Irish and more like it's American. That tells the tale of this monstrous bastion. Money made from selling their souls, now digging the holes of our cultural coffin. But I know where to find Zion. It is within MP3 plugins. Asked to grasp, I have but little fear now of the schoolboys that come around to harass. Alright, I start to give the green light tonight to my thoughts that come and go. And then sometimes the quiet. Until I see this constant red light. An eye with a head that keeps on jumping back into the sickbed. Encouraging acceptance. There I see the flickers of the brilliance of my essence. Where my mind begins to let go, my soul has time and space to say, hello! All is good, so just let it flow. The body becomes a moving smile, meditation freestyle. This is what I'm giving back to this aisle. Meanwhile, I know that I can see in your faces. Meanwhile, I know your faces that are servile to their corporate and multi-conglomerate mobiles, trying to get rich quick. But you can't buy your smile, not on the supermarket shopping aisle. All the while you're going the extra mile, working your way home to the house for the senior. Again tonight, with little fight, I dropped into a think box and posted off my smile to the universal Xerox machine with the subtitle, this city's living a dream. Copies are currently flying from my outbox at a speed much faster than time being measured by these man-made clocks. When you see the face, you might recognize that it's me, the ambitious hippie.
Children of the sea Santa's glee and love for being alive, and call Jenkins by the arm. I walk slowly to the shore, the lap of the cool ocean baptizes my feet. I strip down to shore, icy cold water washes my body. The children in the distance still having fun, me back on the shore like an ice pop getting redressed. Luke and Andre come back from their hunter-gatherer expedition. Did you see them? They look to the sea, then straight down to boxer shorts and dreadlocks. Splash, crash, adiamas, adiamas. Andre down to boxer shorts and glasses. The slow melodic play of oboes and other woodwinds captivates my all. This moment am I to miss this moment? Expression of universal bliss. I pluck the courage to go back to the water, crash, flash of the waves on my naked, loose, simple body. Adiamas, adiamas playing in the background, a witness to the unfolding drama. I'm so cold I begin to almost hyperventilate. I get out on the shore again, watching the simple play of form. I'm a witness, I don't want to be. I get back in the water. Adiamas, cymbals crash, voice caress, the music, the sound electrify my experience. I swim out in my cold state. The keepers of the ocean come back and acknowledge our presence. They go under, around, above, jump, splash, crash, have fun, make their dipping noises. Adiamas, adiamas. Carl Jenkins. Processing his experiences through words and music. Then Luke gets out of the water. Too slim, getting cold. We stay, we're drifting out to sea. We swim back. Then we come and follow us. Too slim, they come and follow us. Give one last stand. Crescendo, a flurry of voices echoes. We leave the ocean and the children. Bruce Lee's son was in the movie The Crow, and he died in the making of the movie. There was a book which was written a few years ago. I don't have the name of the guy at the moment. I know the name of the guy, but I can't remember it. But in Brandon Lee's final interview, he said something which is quite interesting, because he died in the making of the movie, but here it is anyway. So, death is always on the way. But the fact you don't know when it will happen. Sorry, one second. Death is always on the way, but the fact you don't know when it will happen seems to take away the finiteness of life. It's that terrible precision that we hear so much, but because we don't know, we get to think of life as an inexhaustible well. Yet everything happens only a certain number of times, and a very small number, really. I mean, how many more times will you remember a certain afternoon of your childhood? An afternoon that's so deeply a part of your being that you can't even conceive of your life without it. Perhaps four, perhaps five times more, perhaps not even that. How many more times will you watch the full moonrise? Perhaps 20. And yet it all seems limitless. Thank you.
Next up to the mic, we have Mr. Edward O'Dwyer.
It's a shame I got grown accustomed to hitting my head off of that. Hadn't planned on reading this, but I will read it because to write it, I hijacked an idea from Billy Ramsey. So, this is a hijacked idea for a poem. It's called Middle Distance. I just changed the sport. This is called Centre Court Wimbledon. How unassumingly the kitchen table becomes Centre Court at Wimbledon. Appliances, ornaments, and the dirty dishes by the sink, all watching on avidly. Before I realize the trail of less than forced errors behind me. And now, at match point, you serve the question with power, absolute precision. But why? How can you really know? Gracelessly scrambling, as always, caught off guard, that you can push me so far out wide, and at such a velocity. Clumsily, I bat a return back at you, and with that awful clang of a frame contact. I don't know. I suppose I just do. Ever the seasoned pro, ruthlessly competitive, you make your way into the net, maneuvering your body to take it early, meet it on the hop, and put the point emphatically out of my reach with your next words, me still stranded in no man's land, and all the court gaping for your exploit. But as my words, no conviction or panache in their flight, pathetically catch the tape and trickle pitifully down inside my court. The tea kettle's shriek calls it game, set, and match. And though I am certainly the loser, you are not quite the winner.
And this is a villanelle inspired by a line in that song. The lyrics to that song are nothing special, but there is one valuable line. That is, the saddest thing that I have ever seen is smokers outside the hospital doors. So the rest of the lyrics are kind of rubbish, but that's good. So I wrote this song on that line. Their lungs heaving in smoke like a terrible wave. Here are the only clouds of a clear and sunny day, with its imminent death, a mother, a partner, or a mate. So much time that's wasted, and now it's too late. Is it thoughts like these that come, refuse to go away, their lungs heaving in smoke like a terrible wave? Or is it the trouble of a word said in haste, not in haste, not yet taken back, which must now that way stay, with its imminent death, a mother, a partner, or a mate? The saddest thing I've ever seen is their helpless waste. Smokers outside hospital doors, nothing to do or say. Their lungs heaving in smoke like a terrible waste. Nothing to lift the shadow from a life. Reappropriate the world, love, happiness, to a time it all was all okay. This imminent death, a mother, a partner, or a mate. I've seen the sad sink in their faces as they assimilate the meaning, stubbing out the bus in the usual way, their lungs heaving in smoke like a terrible wake. This is imminent death, a mother, a partner, or a mate.
very old graveyard. And this is a poem about a guy called Matthew Fitzgerald, who I don't know the reason why I never knew him. He was born in 1865 and he died in 1885. I won't say any more about the poem because I ruined what's actually in the poem. Matthew Fitzgerald. Even though he was dead, my mother adopted him 30 years ago as her second child. Because he seemed to have no one else, but he was still just a child. With hedge clippers, flowers she had bought, she cleared the look of abandonment from the black iron cross and small granite headstone. Honest, said a prayer, soft with a goodnight kiss. Just last night, she told me all of this. She asked me to visit his grave and to write a poem for him. I went to see it this afternoon. And though she hadn't been there in a year, the grass over him had been cut neat and was covered with daisies, dandelions, even a first buttercup. Not the wilderness she had described. He was like a boy now, suddenly all grown up, autonomous, to take care of himself, to go through death alone at last. It was a mother's time to let go. The idea of it, just imagine that the smoking ban never happened,
okay?
Just for 2 minutes. Remember that? Absolutely, Bob. No, better not. This is called Galaxy.
Like a lone star, I saw your light in the dark. Against the wall, on the other side of the room, the form of a cigarette in your lips. Even this room, all these other people can be a galaxy. I noted how its muscles flexed, grew in the distance, tensed up at a deep draw of breath. I thought of constellations through the black, the space of nothing. Our eyes found this way, and to the moment of veiled fighting, clouds of white smoke dispersing from our exhales. No assuming steps, nor rushing in. But coy measure, natural but drifting, without a gravity push, the naked sinews of eager body softly, softly embracing. Thank you.
And next up to the microphone, we have Sinead Ryan.
I don't know if I've read some of these or not, but it's Lady in the Grass.
small stairs work in a big dark room. Hold every breath and every child's face. Every night, trying not to breathe, trying not to know. Eyes can't live a present word and pain. And hold every breath and every child's face. Know the child that you were and knew what made you tick. You used to run in with glowing eyes and crescent cheeks, just smacking a kiss and run back out again, chase the dog or grab a handful of flowers. But then you got sick. Your cheeks were pale, your body was limp. Your blood betrayed your body more and more each day. I never got to know the adult you should have become. I thought I had all my life to get to know you. But I had only yours, and that was not enough. Which is the class in the aftermath. Am I free? I pass that red brick building every day, and every day I stop and think. I'm always looking over my shoulder to see if you're there. I always look around the next corner because maybe I'll see you. Your voice echoes in the darkest corners of my mind, and my skin crawls. You were a fetus wound within my soul. Someday, I will be free, and you can rot in hell.
Alright. Got one on the other side of that one? I'm glad I'm not on the other side of that one. Okay, just a few texts here. We need to get the stage down here because our next performance is going to be sitting down with the musical instrument.
Okay, I'm going to do some love poems tonight, but I'm going to start with some Rumi. But this is called The Sunrise Rumi. In the early morning hour, just before dawn, lover and beloved awake and take a drink of water. She asks, do you love me or yourself more? Really, tell the absolute truth. He says, there's nothing left of me. I'm like a rude ruby held up to the sunshine. It is still a stone or a world made of redness. It has no resistance to sunlight. This is how Halal said, I am God, and told the truth. The ruby and the sunrise are one. Be courageous and discipline yourself. Completely become hearing and ear, and wear this sun ruby as an earring. Work. Keep digging your well. Don't think about getting off from work. Water is there somewhere. Submit to a daily practice. Your loyalty to that is a ring on the door. Keep knocking, and the joy inside will eventually open a window and look out to see who's there.
Thank you.
the time. I want to be the rock your wavy blonde hair breaks on. Our love will be cool like the ocean. You will be my daytime girl, my happiness pearl, my nighttime pearl. And yes, I could let you go in a breath, knowing that each breath is all we get. And each morning your happiness will unfurl, not just for me, but for everybody. And I will not be jealous, for this will be no heady love. Our love will be like cool water on a burning world. I never asked to be put on high, I cannot reach the sky. I can only gaze obstruct at life. And if you sometimes obstruct the view, please don't get annoyed if I tell you so. And please, please don't try and compare me with music or poetry or love. I am much too small for that. I cannot even compete with your vision of me, so please don't envision me. And please put me down in that place in your heart you reserve for children or the very old. I am not helpless now, and appear strong, but this is just an illusion, and sure I would defend you, but please don't depend on that grassy paradise you want us to breathe. I'm not promising anything, except that I will grow old with or without you, and I will be bold enough to hold you now that I am strong, and please don't get me wrong, I would like to be your hero, but in the end we're all just a zero. Yeah. I remember how you wore your corporate costume, your meteor dress so elegantly, and how we danced last night in the kitchen. And wonder, will we keep love's distance between us as celestial objects orbit the sun, remaining earthbound friends or orbiting lovers, and wonder if you are thinking the same. And end up hoping it worked out with you, which I promised myself I wouldn't do.
And next up we have Patricia Walsh.
piece which is called Crucifixion Made Easy. It's loosely based on the machinations of the Socrates. There it is. If surely, of course, the sums it out know against what they differ and be contrasting, it's too easy, of course, to fight without death, whenever the public darkens on soft denizens, a twilight will lead to incredibility to the incredulity of the breakfast conversation. Questioned unnecessarily, played by intrusion into public life, eyeball to eyeball, and transcendence rules the world. What one would give for a stealthy conversation, bypassing conscience, bypassing fact and fancy, staring the inches, climbing the lost inches of professional delivery. This one is not a potential title, but anybody who's had to get up in the morning would know what it's about. I feel the drill, I know the drill. I bar my way to the alarm, challenge for the important patient, beep, beep, beep. We're looking about the digits, a digit. Power the balls of hell, slowly excavate through the layers of blanket. Collapse the feet, pass on the floor, bring in recognition of what the exercise means. I'll point this exercise, beep, 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 turn up.
Thanks, Patricia. Next up we have, okay, as I said at this point, Mr. Jack Lyons.
Hi, this is about somebody was up earlier and they were talking about how whole things seem to happen so fast in our lives, and I think it was our guest poet. Absolutely brilliant. So this is called Instant. Gray sky, cold head. They tried fish today, but nobody had a mind for it. So who's gonna be the one to risk his neck, open his mouth to celebrate the stale smell of success? Print paper swims in distraught, photo faces fade into wet. Thick or sticky, thick or licking, yuck! Night rain, cold head, cynic clinic, jukebox queue, she's got a mind for fiddles and potato pie. It's a wrap. This is about growing up and, like me, getting old. I don't need my friend's glasses tonight, by the way. This white glasses. I kicked and cried and fought to survive. She screamed inside and strained to expel me from her blood clot womb. I tore the edge of her vagina and then I made it here. I crept around the front room carpet, it smelled of manufactured thread. I bumped into chair legs and tabletops. I once buried my head under the couch cushion in a vain attempt to draw attention. I looked out the window at the little birch tree. It was just beginning. I stumbled in up the stairs to celebrate my 21st. My head reeled and my body shook, unable as I was to contain the vast amount of alcohol. I slept alone and found solace in my pillow, and soon I was to discover that I was capable of reproduction. Yes, very capable of reproduction. I looked out the window and saw the little birch tree. It had grown like me. Its limbs dressed fancy in olive leaves, and it shook in a wing, but mangled to stand when the hard wind blew. I hobbled around on my walking stick, black thorn with nut grips on its spine. I progressed, if you want to call it that, onto an illuminous steel chrome Zimmer frame lent to me by the local authority. I searched the years of my wrinkled past and found only an echo of a voice. My children came, went and left me all alone. I went back to childhood, and my rubber veins turned blue with varicose. My height, my vision, my balance, even my sleeping became erratic. They came, uninvited, into my home, ransacking the rooms as I slept. I awoke to find them standing over me. Then they held a candle to my wrinkled hands. And when I cried and moaned and begged for mercy, they laughed and left the house. I looked out the window and saw the little birch tree, and that too had been violated, much like me.
Thanks very much, Jack. And next up we have Mr. Jane Barry.
You hid invasion of pain in pockets of life's ditches, just as Paddy did his masterpieces, stony grey inside. The retrieving moment sat in cells and opposing corners, shallow boxing, while outside a facade of communion and party dresses gave conscience to a duck to moor itself close by. Were you that bludgeoned child camouflaged by a deafness lurking in adult cognizance? A hogless daughter listing in a sea of non-commingled waves? Your family's fulcrum bent as a comfortable title? And if you could, would you take it now and donate that long-awaited volume of love and disdain? I will take a consignment with me and disseminate it to the depths of our broad harbour and anchor it to hell. I will leave what love I have that I have carried here tonight for you. I will light my candle and send it to you regularly. Was it poetry's midwife that delivered you here tonight and stood you upright as an emotion? A week ago, I was in the airport in Holland, just about to fly back to Cork, and I suddenly became sick, and I was taken to the infirmary in the airport, and then by ambulance to a hospital in the University Hospital in Amsterdam, and it was a close call, and if I hadn't made that call, and I certainly wouldn't be here tonight, and get your mind rolling a bit, you know. And 7 days later, I was in Rome, and I was sitting around the table with five other people. And at the table next door, there was an elderly couple in their late 80s, and their son and his wife and daughter and husband and a sister. And I just took a look, and I noticed that the man slumped in his chair. So I went to him, with my wife who took me, Margaret. We went and took his pulse, and his heart stopped. So I took him down on the ground, and we gave him CPR. Margaret did the pulmonary, did the cardiac side of it. He came around for a couple of seconds and went again. So I said, look, let's continue. And he eventually came around, and the paramedics came and took him away. And the following day I went back, and I asked how he was. And apparently his pacemaker had packed up, and he's fine. There's not a problem there. So in 7 days, I had not to think about it, so I wrote this poem the following day, or that day after the restaurant. It's called Mario's, that was the name of the restaurant. There were no names exchanged in the heart of our intimacy, no common tongue, no culture. Yet I laid you down as gently as a lover does on the innocent night, carefully, considerately, and slowly. I made a pillow for you that I wrecked and swiped the nape of a nearby chair and opened your top button. I held your still wrists as she tilted her ear to your side. I heard the roar from Circus Maximus that woke sleeping Colosseum, cowering by a feast of peeping eyes that stared admiringly, like mother drooling on the edge of her newborn's cot. You have many mothers on you now. The echoes of our journeys saw helplessness as the only choice that decorated the multitude of tables. I drew within and sucked the sober gnaw of life that bit me in this ambush just the shortest week ago. There was no religion, blessing, caressing, nor bargaining then. Payback due stood promiseless as I placed my clasped hands upon her season-ending chest and felt the matrimony of her destiny, mea maxima culpa. She placed her lips on yours, neat as a dedicated plumbing fixture, and fed you while I fractioned the still I've seen. The camouflage of gawking mouths poking themselves through future happy stimulus. Your feedback refused to deliver itself, and I slid back to a sinking time in my innocent youth when a silence said it was all over, all off. The end of the relating, the seeding of the unforgiving lump. Her wasted tidal volumes she selflessly infused again, more intimately than the seasoned lover's whisper, the spark of their lovemaking. I pushed your sternum with the determination of a tight-head of a 5 meter. I am Caesar, I am Claudius, I am Nero, I am a gladiator, and she is every queen that dressed your ancient city. She whose mirrored soul I swim in is God, in a land of many gods, and gives you life and love to keep. Take it. The twinning of your opening eyes and her welcome announcement that indeed you drew a breath of life, broadcast a beat of relief that fed the message multitude and stacked the signs and waiting to be broken promises. Were you and I the chosen slaves, saved to fight another day, and truly the only ones who met the quencher of the wick? We who saw the polishing of the powder? Are we refugees borrowing from that time, our masticators prematurely? Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Next up to the mic, we have Mr. Seamus Farrell.
Attention divided, a one-way dialogue, in rapture, the mop of dark corals gently shook, to expose the tiny cell phone, standing shoulder to shoulder, in clouds of empathy with strangers. Hey, what's your name? Great start, new manager, champ knocked out. What a relief. Been one for last weekend called Jamming. Snare drums rattling, trombone zoom, tenor sax screaming, double bass boom, guitars twanging from electric heights, chime still tinkles to muted lights, silver flutes tootle, percussions rush, clarinets warble, to alto sax gush, trumpets calling, tambourines jing, hi-hat lifting, the cowbells ring, sirens blare, notes so shrill, harmonicas leap the whistles trill. Banjo's rat-a-tat will courtly reply to conch shell echo of piccolo high. Xylophones hit, but tubas rude, bongo's rhythm get in the mood. Keyboards persisting, notes so brash, French horns burping, cymbals crash, oboes blending as fiddles in sync, to jiving cats, no time to think. Baby, that's a
bedroom for tall tales. This could be a tall tale, but it could be a tale of anybody's computer who subscribes to free downloads, free screensavers. Ben will find a way, and I had to get my computer rebuilt, but I got the coin out.
Virus upon virus. I know you find some.
Free downloads. They've altered my application, activated my archives, booted my browser, buried my broadband, bookmarked my bits, connected my console, captured my cartridge, clicked on my cookies, commandeered my cursor, dropped down my devices, delved in my downloads, documented my data, dragged out my driver, displayed my desktop, erased my errata, encrypted my emails, fancied my favorite bumble, my floppy, fragmented my fonts, firewalled my folders, gorged my gigabytes, grouped up my game ports, hijacked my hardware, hacked at my hyperlink, hung out my homepage, hosted my hard drive, inserted my icon, interrupted my intranet, jellied my Java, jumpered my jackrabbit, keystroked my terminal, kneaded my knickknacks, logged on my laptop, labeled my language, massaged my poor mouse, merged with my modem, minimized my monitor, muddled my memory, memorized my moniker, negated my network, networked my nonsense, opened my output, outsourced my options, plagiarized my process, programmed my printer, punctured my pop-ups, partitioned my password, queried my QWERTY, questioned my query, quoted my quandary, raided my right click, recycled my registry, selected my software, sampled my startup, serviced my smart drive, scheduled my scanner, sentenced my shortcut, trespassed my trackball, trojaned my toolbar, uncovered my upload, underlined my undo, violated my version, vetoed my vectors, vented my volumes, wormed in my window, weakened my wizard, X-rated my excerpt, yawned at my yarns, zeroed my zip drive.
Next up to the mic we have Felicia Misha. Misha.
She's like one of the good help. I started this about an hour and a half ago, she had a pure rough draft. And it was prompted by walking down to the shop for a cup of tea, and I sort of looked over and there was a little girl's dress in a window, and it sort of took my breath away. And it's called an unborn daughter. years after you did not arrive, so many years in fact, it would be a sentimental relic to us both now. You, a young woman, insistent on your own choices, no matter how ridiculous in my maternal estimation. I spotted a dress, one of a thousand, one of a stream of a thousand indulgences you would have been saved in. Spotted it in a shop window on a city street. Me, an escapee from the burdens of my own overly ardent, godly emotions. Cast off in a fit, uncertain of what would replace it. Unable or unwilling to carry on. An A-line dress for all the grades you would have brought home in pride, arrogance, or self-satisfaction. All the things that leveled me, from which I still attempt in earnest to recover. All the lowly human obstacles I would have flung myself before, like the new thing to you. An A-line dress in rich, soulful maroon, the maroon of Tibetan robes, the maroon of incarnate bodhisattvas, comes to alleviate the suffering of the world as you would have done mine. Maroon of high sanctification, maroon the color of the almost dry blood from which you evaporated before I could have reflected. An A-line maroon dress with broad white ribbon across the band of your acid breastbone. Virginal to bind your innocent warrior heart, the one I never heard break with the cruel knowledge of the world or expand with its joy. An A-line maroon dress with white sateen band and sateen rosette, pink like a baby's mouth, shiny as if wet, as yours would have been, as it made its way curiously toward language and its million questions, and a chakra line that, running straight up from your unmanifest spine, tender and showing sweetly, of skin I never touched, up, up gently to your delicate pink heart, unvanquished of pink rosette signifying the spiritual love you would have taught me. An A-line maroon dress with white satin bands, rosette chakras without sleeves so that the world could be worn by your Amazon arms, which would have been strengthened in mine, hung empty in the sparkling window 20 years later so that I could imagine you.